I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they'll not be judged by the colour of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream that one day down in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream that one day every valley should be exalted, every hill and mountain made low, the rough places will be made a plain, and the crooked places made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh will see it together. Now, whose words are they? Do you know? Martin Luther King, if you're too young to know. Martin Luther King, the Baptist American pastor who was behind the civil rights movement in the 1960s in England. And I mention it because dreams, when they're the right dreams, are very powerful. And I mention it because I have a dream. I have a dream for this particular church, a dream that I hope you're going to see this morning is based on God's dream. Not so much his dream, in fact that's too trivial a word to use of what God is doing. It's really, more appropriately, his vision, his intention for the future of his planet. And because it is God's dream, his vision, and because you are God's, I want to win you to it today. That's my intention, unashamedly from the outset, especially on this morning when Summerfest begins, so that during this week and during this year and the years beyond that, my goal will be that as a church we'll be rowing together. Now, you know when the Olympic Games come around and you see the sculling events, not the sculling events at the pub, there are various sorts of sculling events, the rowing events, the singles and the doubles and the quad sculls, but especially I love the eights. In fact, once upon a time, back in 1908, they had a 17s sculling team. Now, you know why I love that kind of thing? Because it's extraordinary to see a team operating together, rowing together. The synchronisation of those guys, which makes you kind of think of synchronised swimming, which is a little less exciting. I guess unless you do synchronise swimming, then it's very exciting. But to see something like that operating together, just enormously powerful, the power of rowing together. Those captured by God's intention for his future always demonstrate that by getting on board and rowing together. And that's my goal this morning, for us as a church to be those who row together. So come to Micah chapter 1. That passage, we've looked at it actually some terms ago, and see the picture of the future that God sketches out for us. It begins with a statement in verse 1 about the last days, which is when these things take place. Now, when are the last days? I'm going to come back to that in a moment, but notice four realities that define those days. Here's the first one, in verse 1. It's the centrality of God's appointed place. The centrality of God's appointed place. Verse 1, Micah chapter 4. In the last days, the mountain of the Lord's temple will be established as the highest of the mountains. It'll be exalted above the hills, and peoples, which is actually the word Gentiles, will stream to it. This isn't a picture of some kind of seismic geological event, where kind of all the mountains become taller than they were before. Mount Zion is around about 700 metres tall, which means it's a relatively tall hill, you know. It's kind of not any great mountain. It's about a half of Mount Selwyn. Been to Mount Selwyn? It's about a third of Mount Kosciuszko. it's a shrimp of a mountain, you know. So you wonder what it means when God tells you here that that mountain's going to be exalted above the hills. Now, the New Testament will tell you more, of course, about the significance of that word Zion. But the significance of it lay in the temple that was at its apex, at the apex of that mountain. For Zion to be exalted really meant that the temple would be exalted. The gathering place of God with his people, it would be exalted. Now, there's the first reality. But it brings you to the second one, scan down of those four realities, because in the last days, the nations in great numbers will gather to worship God at the place of his temple. Verse 2. For many nations will come and say, come, let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the temple of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways so that we may walk in his paths. The law will go out from Zion, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. Now, some of you who are old enough, I don't know if you've ever done this, but I remember as a kid, I must have been very young, we went to, when the NRL grand finals used to be at the SCG. Anyone remember that? Where are they now? They're at, you know, Homebush or something like that. Whoever knows where they actually are now. But I remember going out there on one occasion with my dad to watch the mighty Rabbits vanquish the hapless St. George Dragons. And as we kind of made our way to the ground, you know, and I'm like this eight-year-old kid walking along with my dad, it was like this holy pilgrimage of people, hordes and hordes of people, all heading in the same direction, all heading to the temple of rugby league in Sydney, all heading to the SCG, streaming to this one place. Now, that's the picture here, although it's a little less secular than that. The picture here is all the nations heading in one place, gathering together, streaming to the place where they can meet with God, meet at the place where they can worship him. There's the second great reality that Micah wants you to see about God's future. About God's future. Here's the third one. The third one. It's the coming of peace of the that comes with the good rule of God. See it now in verse 3. He will judge between many peoples and will settle disputes for strong nations far and wide. They'll beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. It is, if I can say, it's that wonderful picture of God's rule. The rule of God where conflict and war becomes a thing of the past. I think that's part of what Martin Luther King. I think that's actually what he saw in that passage and passages like it. He saw that great moment where war and conflict would be a thing of the past. And this concept here is there's no need for weapons. They're turned to a better use. And the picture is completed in verse 4. Come to verse 4. Everyone will sit under their own vine and under their own fig tree, and no one will make them afraid, for the Lord Almighty has spoken. That's it. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Old Testament. This is this classic picture of Israelite rest. In Australia, it'd be a little bit different. It would be like everyone sits on their own patch of beach, you know, under their own beach umbrella, their own sun shelter, with their own esky, and their own 50 plus, and their own kind of mosquito repellent, and they bask in the sun all day in complete safety and never get sunburned. There's the Australian picture, a little bit different to the Israelite picture. But it is the picture of total peace. Not just, if I can put it this way, not just the absence of hostility, it's the picture of the presence of plenty. There's the Israelite idea, a little stronger than our sense of peace. There's no reason for fear. Notice the reason there's no reason for fear. There's no reason for fear in verse 3 because God himself has spoken. Because he's secured peace for his people. Now note how the vision finishes. Verse 5. It finishes with a statement of resolve. All the nations may walk in the name of their gods, but we'll walk in the name of the Lord our God forever and ever. Now, friends, there's God's certain future. It's not just a dream like the Martin Luther King dream. It's not just a dream like you might have a dream of buying a house on the Gold Coast or actually buying a house in a market where you can't afford it. It's not just that kind of dream which is like a pie in the sky. This is God's certain future. 500 years ago, it was almost to the day, 1516, a famous Englishman named Thomas More wrote a famous book called Utopia. Heard of Utopia? Well, you've heard the word before, Utopia. It was about this fictitious kind of Pacific island. There's no crime, no greed, no want, no war, no private property. Sounds a bit communist at that point, doesn't it? Everything was just shared in common, and it was idyllic. Throughout history, there's been lots of utopias, pictures about the ideal future. Karl Marx, the founder of communism, he had an idea of utopia. It was kind of the idea where it was an economic utopia. Everyone just works together for the state. Notice how well that worked? When the Berlin Wall came down at the end of the 1980s, because it doesn't work. Sin destroys that kind of utopia. The hippies had a utopia. Anyone old enough to be I'm not going to even go there. Now, the hippies had a utopia in the 1960s, and you kind of watch those documentaries about Woodstock and stuff like that. It was the utopia, I think, of free drugs and free sex. It didn't make for a great period in the 70s, 80s and 90s, actually. And modern Western governments are on about a utopia. Not sure if you've noticed, we're on about a multicultural utopia. All the different nations, all coming to Australia and mixing together. You noticing that's not working very well? Very hard to get that kind of thing happening. It's why multiculturalism actually is it's an uphill battle. Because sin ruins everything. And it always will. Ruins all those grandiose human plans. It always will, until Jesus returns to do away with it, which is what Micah's vision depicted. 3,700 years ago is the piece of literature that you're reading here. If you're unfamiliar with Christian things, there's some historical context for you. This is a very old document. It's God's age-old picture of what he's going to do with his world. But that it's old doesn't mean he won't achieve it. What does the reality mean for us as we commence Summerfest today with, we trust, friends from around the coast arriving tomorrow, and that's in your hands? What does it mean for us as we commence Summerfest? What does it mean for us as we serve together this year? Well, friends, you can't understand the Old Testament prophets unless you see what the New Testament makes of them. You do kind of need to see what's the word that actually filters that for us and tells us the end result of it, because the climactic coming of Jesus provides the key for all those promises of God, all that you read in the Old Testament. So what does his coming tell you about that expression, the last days? The last days. Hebrews chapter 1 is the place to see it. Come to Hebrews chapter 1. Keep your finger in Micah. Keep your finger in that other passage that Michaela read for you. How many fingers you got? Not enough. Hebrews chapter 1, the author of the letter to the Hebrews was writing to Hebrew Christians, Jewish Christians. He was writing about the significance of Jesus to all their Old Testament hopes. And so in verse 1, he begins with this. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways. Note the expression. But in these last days, he's spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things and through whom also he made the universe. Now, friends, he did this in the last days. You understand, of course, when those last days come? I labour the point actually because for some Christian people, the last days are some mystical time that I discern by reading Revelation and looking at the events that take place in the world around me and discerning if they've arrived yet, have they arrived yet, what's happening in Russia, what's happening in the Middle East. No. The New Testament tells you when the last days come. The last days have come with Jesus. They extend beyond the coming of Jesus. Indeed, we're living in the era of the last days. They extend far into the future. But this is what Micah saw. This is the picture of the future, which is to say, of course, God's fulfilling it now. This is the time when little Mount Zion becomes chief among the mountains. This is the time, actually, when all the people from all the nations stream like a grand final crowd to the place of God, the temple of God, where they can worship his Messiah and learn his ways. This is the time when God brings his peace, the time when his people are able to live in security. This is the time when there's no further need for war, though you'll notice that's still with us. Need to come back to that in a moment. This is the time we're living in at the moment. Of course, they're not complete. You know that, of course, because of the nature of war that ravages around us. But with the coming of Jesus, do get the point. The turning of the ages has come. We're in it. And that is to say, it means something significant for us. Now, there's one little thing that you need to ponder in this. If Mount Zion is the focus of all of this, do you need to go to Jerusalem sometime soon? Do you need to get on a plane and catch a flight there and do your annual pilgrimage to the Holy Land like the Muslims do their pilgrimage to Mecca? No. Because remember, Jesus is God's last word. So whenever you read the Old Testament, you need to check what difference has Jesus made to the fulfillment of that particular image, to the way we understand what Mike is seeing in this particular passage. In particular, what difference does he make to all that talk about Mount Zion? Come to that passage that Michaela read, the second one there. It's Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. And we're going to pick it up in verse 18. But let me cut to the chase for you. Give you a moment to work it out for yourself. When do you think a person today comes to Mount Zion, as Micah saw it in the Old Testament? When does a person today come to Mount Zion? There's one thought. When a person's converted, born again. Got others? You'll never understand the Old Testament prophets, you see, unless you think about some of those images. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 18, the author's encouraging these faint-hearted Christians that they're not like Israel. They're not like Israel who came with Moses to Mount Sinai, and it was a place of law and fear, and they were quaking in terror, and the mountain was shaking. Instead, verse 22, they've come, he says, to Mount Zion. And notice what follows, because he heaps up a bunch of images. You have come to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. You've come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly. You've come to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. You've come to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of the righteous made perfect. And now notice how he finishes. You have come to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant. Friends, don't get lost. You're almost there. He's telling you what Micah meant when he saw in that ancient vision all the nations streaming to God's place of worship, to his holy mountain, to his living temple. Where is it? It's Jesus. He's the great meeting place for God with his people. He's the place that Micah foresaw. Because remember what he said, what Jesus said in the Gospels, destroy this temple and I'll raise it again in 3 days. Remember what John tells you in that? He was talking about the temple of his body. Jesus is God's ultimate temple. He's the place to go to know and to worship the living God. He's the fulfillment of Mount Zion. He's the fulfillment of what Micah saw. Just imagine, actually, if you're wondering how that works and you're struggling with reading the Old Testament, imagine you're a 21st century Christian who understands the gospel and you're going back in time to tell Jews what all this means when their Messiah comes. How would you do it? Because tell you what, you can't use words like crucifixion. That's not going to work. I didn't know what crucifixion was. You won't use words like church, because Old Testament believers didn't know what church was. You won't use words like gospel, because they didn't understand what the gospel was, though they certainly had a good news. You won't talk about coming to a service. They wouldn't understand any of that. You'd have to explain New Testament ideas using Old Testament symbols. That's what the prophets did. Come back then to Micah chapter 4. Come back and see what he's saying, because he's talking to people like us. He's talking to people who live in our era. He showed you about God's vision for the future, 3 important realities. Here was the first one. The centrality in the last days of God's appointed place. What's God's appointed place? It's Jesus. Reality number 2, people from all the nations flooding to worship Jesus. Reality number 3, the people of God living in complete safety forever because of the rule of Jesus. Now that brings you to my dream. My dream's a little more domesticated perhaps than that dream. My dream, of course, is far less significant than God's, but I want to persuade you, my dream takes its shape from God's dream. And I'm deliberately inviting you this morning to come and row together to see this dream fulfilled, because it's not just mine. It's God's dream. My dream concerns Jesus. God intends in the last days for him to have the centre place in your life, for him to be the one who fills the landscape of your life, for him to be the one who fills your ambitions and your dreams and your aspirations. In fact, Jesus, you'll be aware in Mark chapter 8, tells you, you cannot be his disciple unless that's the case. You got ambitions and dreams? Got aspirations for life that have got nothing to do with Jesus? Get rid of them. Get rid of them. They can't stand in his presence. Jesus is saying, actually, he needs to be the aspiration and dream if you really understand who he is. So are you willing to row together with me on that, to make Jesus central in your life? I've got a dream that when we sing, we come to church on the weekend here, we won't just go through the motions mumbling the words like people who actually don't know them or don't want to sing them. My dream is actually that we'll sing as people who want to exalt Jesus, because he's central in what we're doing. He's the big deal. He's the thing that all the ages are about. And remember that community in reality number 2 of God's big dream, the community who stream in the last days to come to the place of worship? They're the great prize and goal that God is working to in the last days. His great prize and goal is building that community. And friends, I've got to tell you, if that's his great goal, then it's got to be yours. If it isn't yours, you simply haven't understood Christian life. That's what he's on about. Row together with him on his dream. I've got a dream. Imagine it. You come to church here next week, everybody knows your name. Imagine that happening. Just a little quick thing here. Who knows the name of every person in this place? Oh, I do. Yeah, yeah. I reckon Felicity and Richard and a few of those probably do. I think there's Greg Harris and those guys. I reckon there's a bunch of people who do it. That's actually what we're working at because we're a community. We're aiming together to create a family. We want to know one another's name because there's the basis of a relationship, isn't it? It's kind of worthwhile taking the time to learn it because it's worth it to God. So it's worth it to us. And that community, you know, imagine you rock up next week and they've heard you've had a hard week and someone sits you down just to listen and they don't interrupt you, they just hear you out and pray for you. I've got a dream about a community like that. Imagine it. I've got a dream that people make it to church pretty much every week. Can you imagine that? They make it to church every week because they care about the community. Of course they care. Is there a bigger thing going on in the world than that? Jesus says no. He says that's the big issue that he's building. If you haven't seen that, you haven't understood what he's on about at all. I've got a dream they make it to church every week because they know the impact they have when they're not there. Discouraging. And they know the impact they have when they are there. Enormously encouraging. Because that's the big thing that God's on about. And I've got a dream about all your neighbours. Not that I know all your neighbours. I've got a dream about all your neighbours from all the nations, all down at Deepwater Plaza, as they do on a Sunday morning when you're at church. And I've got a dream that they say to each other, let's go to the mountain of the Lord. Let's go to Peninsula EV. Let's go and learn about God, hear about his ways and learn about his paths. I know someone who's from there. They might just invite me and maybe they'll tell me the gospel. Do it this week. I have a dream that out there on the peninsula there are people like that. Do you know the president of the rugby club last year in Yumina did exactly that? He had been thinking about Christian life for a long period of time. No one knew it. Well, his wife might have known it. He said exactly that to himself. I wonder if there's somewhere I can go so I can hear the gospel. You know what he did? Took himself to Erina. Took himself half an hour away because he didn't know where he would hear it. And he found out the gospel and it answered his questions. But imagine it was you who did. Imagine the thrill of being part of something like that. Summerfest is your chance for that. Because you don't know what your neighbours are thinking, do you? You can't possibly know. But Summerfest is the opportunity that you might be involved in something like that. And I've got a dream, actually, that those people will ask all those questions of you. Because as you live quietly among them, naturally saying something occasionally about what you do with your life, week by week, and the place, perhaps in some small way, that Jesus plays in it, people from all the nations who are all around about you, so you don't have to go to Jerusalem to find them, you don't have to go overseas at all, they're all just here. They've quietly filed it away. They've quietly been pondering it these many months, wanting it for themselves. And I've got a dream about us that concerns that third reality, the reality of the peace that God will bring in his world, that we'll take it to heart. The promise of that particular peace. You realise, of course, friends, that this side of heaven, there is no spiritual force that can separate you from God. Yes, there are dangers, but there's not, you know, there's not insurmountable dangers on the peninsula. There's no force that can separate you from God, so you don't have to be timid. Hands up if you are timid. Yeah, lots of us are timid. Yeah, but you don't need to be timid. You know, they're not quite beating swords into ploughshares at Yumina. You know, they're not quite doing that, but I don't reckon there's too many swords down here either that you need to be worried about. You don't have to be too scared. God promises you a peace that begins in this way at the moment. It's spiritual peace. Nothing's going to harm you, not spiritually. So you can take some risks. And I've got a dream that if someone came up to us and said, please can you tell me what the hope is that you have in Jesus that helps you live so differently, you tell them about him. And you do it because your hope in him is so bright, it's so consuming and so vivid, it fills the horizon of your life. And you'd be delighted to speak about him and you'd know exactly what to say. Is that true of you? You'd know exactly what to say? It might happen this week. Every reason why it ought to happen this week. And I've got a dream that on the Sunday morning when your neighbour, who you've been talking to about the summer series, haven't you? I've got a dream that your neighbour whom you've been talking to about those things, when he finally plucks up the courage to come, we'll welcome him so warmly. We won't leave him feeling awkward in church, and the preacher will be interesting and succinct. There's a dream. And the Spirit will empower him to scratch where they itch. So at morning tea, they'll say, I've had such a great time. Can I come again next week? I've got a dream, but you know what? It's just God's dream. It's actually his reality. It's his intention for the age in which we live. It's Micah's vision of God's promised future 3,700 years ago, coming to fulfillment in the last days in which we live. And remember how Micah finished it? With this word of conviction. It's there in verse 5, if you're still on that page. All the nations may walk in the name of their gods, but we will walk in the name of the Lord our God forever and ever. You hearing what's being said there? This is a word of resolution. And I'm inviting you this morning to resolve intelligently, consciously and deliberately to be part of God's future. It's the future he's working out in every place. You might see it far more vividly in nations other than Australia, but he's working it out in every nation. He's working it out here on the peninsula. He's working it out in this place. Therefore, I'm asking you this year, will you row together this year for that future? It will start with Summerfest tomorrow, but you know what? It's going to start when we pray in just a moment. It's going to start when we sing in just a second. And I'm going to urge you to be part of that and row together with us on it. How about I pray to that end now? Our Heavenly Father, we want to thank you for the future that you've laid out for us that is so sure that today, though it may be the time of small things, you might assure us of its certainty. Father, I want to pray for these guys that we will row together as a church, that you'll grow us, that you'll bring people into your kingdom who don't know you. And we pray it because we know that's exactly what Jesus wants and he's worthy of it. We pray that this week during Summerfest, you'll glorify yourself. You'll do it through us. We ask it in his great name. Amen.